This is the Presentation Podcast, Season 7, Episode 157. Everyone is busy prepping for the 2022 edition of the Presentation Summit. On this episode, we are joined by Rick Altman, the founder and creative director of the conference, which is celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. But first, here are the show hosts, Troy Coller, Sandra Johnson, and Nolan Haynes.
I'm Troy Coller from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Haynes from Nolan Haynes Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Okay, we got the three of us together. We actually have a fourth person waiting in the wings, which I'm very excited about. But I got to hear what's happening in your studios. I mean, we're just continuing to be crazy busy. Nolan, what's happening with you?
Well, we're headed down to the Jersey Shore tomorrow.
That sounds cool.
For a week. It's only an hour south of us. For a week before the girls start kindergarten as soon as we get back. So it's zooming along. And on the work front, I just got back from my astronomy conference where I've been teaching for the past 5 or maybe 6 years. And I get to see some of the people return. And just sort of these are mostly sort of postdoctoral astrophysicists and astronomers trying to get jobs. And this is a program that helps sort of develop their career. And this year, I got one of the best comments I have in a long time from somebody who'd attended one of the trainings a few years ago. And he was a postdoc. He was doing his fellowship. And what a part of these guys' job paths is to present. And especially when they're on the job interviews, right? So they're all trying to get professorships, at universities, and they have to present. And so he said, last year or year before, he used everything I taught him to put together his interview presentation. Mm-hmm. And he said he's now a professor, and he credits it to his good presentation, which is a huge part of it. And I said, oh, that's fantastic. You got an offer out of that. And he said, I got 5 offers. I got to pick, which one I wanted. So he was just, and he wow. rushed up to me, opened his computer, said, let me show it to you. So I was really, that was a really nice comment.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic.
All right, Troy, how about you?
Oh my gosh. So I just got back from, I was on a show site again. Always fun, but this
surprise,
one was a
surprise.
ultra wide LED wall. The project was, it was great because it was like, I don't remember the pixel count. It was 60 feet wide by floor to ceiling tall. I believe that was 18 feet. It has a big LED wall. It was the entire set. And then there was pipe and drape to fill the rest of the ballroom on the sides, but it was great. The internal design team for the company that was, the event was for, they did the design. It was really good. I always get nervous when they say, we're going to design the widescreen, this and that. The content was well sized. The animations were great. From a design perspective, it was really nice. I was there to organize and run everything because there was a lot of moving components. So took care of all that. But the one thing that I do not have an answer for is how people determine the page setup for anything that's not 16 by 9. These slides that I received were 25 inches wide by 6.667 inches tall. I mean, it's got a good width, 27, 25. It filled the aspect ratio. It was interesting that wouldn't be the numbers I would use. I mean, aspect ratio is aspect ratio. As long as you fill it, you're good.
Right.
But I don't know, maybe that's a conference session or
do you podcast? Would you always start with 7.5 inches high? That's sort of generally
that is actually my go-to because we are pulling in content from other slides and they're all based on 7.5 inches high. That way they're going to fit. Now you have to do scale things because this was again floor to ceiling, riser to ceiling, so you wouldn't want content for the first 2 feet of physical space because you don't want to be pointing at your ankles at, hey, there's what it is. Are you blocking it? There was a great image of a guy showing frustration. So it was a guy screaming, "Arr!" stock photography. It was so big that the presenter was right in front of it from the camera shot. It looked like he was about to be swallowed. It was pretty awesome. I was like, yeah, they didn't think that one through all the way. But anyways, it's just an interesting thing. As more and more live events come back and more unique aspect ratios, it's better than what I've seen, which is a lot of people just making this teeny, 3-inch tall page size.
So it was a mystery. I always ask you, Troy, whenever I have to do something non-standard, I I always come to you and say, but what should I do?
And I'm happy to run through the formula. It's all pixel count and DPI and other things. Hey, and then the last thing I'll say is I'm actually packing for a large conference that we're supporting in Chicago. And we get to do, we're a large team. We are the speaker ready room. So we're handling, we're ingesting all of the presentations. We're organizing them, make sure they're in the right ballrooms. We're handling the mobile app. We're handling digital signage. We're the graphics ops. We're the live stream ops. I mean, we're a lot of things at this particular conference, but this is a really exciting thing. On the presentation team is Echo Swinford, who's been, you know, she's been with us for years. It's a fun event. This one's practice. I think she's driving there because Chicago is close enough. But now, literally doing us a favor as a last minute request, is our very own Sandy Johnson going to be with us.
Hey, now I'm feeling left out.
You're going to be in Jersey Shore, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I am glad to hang out with you guys. It's like coming home. Except
it's going
to
be fun. Yeah, and by the way, Nolan, we're done every day by 6 o'clock, and we're in the middle of downtown Chicago.
So we
have lots
city.
Of places to go to. Yeah, and we've got per diem to use up every night. Oh, it'll be great. So anyways, thank you, Sandy, for that last minute request.
I'm glad you reached out to me.
What's happening with you?
Well, let's see. On a personal note, my family's flying in from all over the world over the next couple of weeks, so I get to hang with them too. That's going to be really fun. I just booked a volunteer gig with my favorite nonprofit. Once again, I'll be working with at-risk junior college students to help them PowerPoint responsibly. I use the science of great slides pitch that I've presented often. So I'm really, really excited. Last year I had to present online, but this year I'll be able to be on site. It's in the San Francisco area. And so we'll be able to do so much more. I'll be able to, because of their at-risk status, for example, rather than coming to a webinar at 6 o'clock at night when they have to be putting, they're a single parent and have to be putting food on the table, I get to have them for a whole Friday. So I'm really, really excited for that. Let's see, what else? Oh, well, in the work front, I'm working on a huge investor pitch in the no more plastics market. And that has really been a learning about plastics and what it's doing to our world, including working with major automobile companies. I've got a supermodel in the mix and a bunch of design brands. And on another project, I'm handing over an interactive sales pitch that I recently completed, but I'm handing it over to internal trainees. So wish me luck.
Yeah, what you want to do is check back in on that with 3 months from now. What does it look like? Does it still look like the file I gave you?
Exactly.
Presentation Summit 2022 will be the 20th, yes, two decades, 20th anniversary of the PowerPoint and presentation specific conference. History tidbit, I, Troy Collar, was an attendee at the very first event held in Tucson, Arizona, which was a phenomenal memory and a phenomenal experience to suddenly be surrounded by presentation people. This conversation, we are joined by the ever endearing Presentation Summit creator and director, Rick Altman, for a conversation about what to expect at this year's conference, along with some talk about the evolution of presentation.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
Good morning. Fine, thanks. I have major FOMO, though. I want to go to the Jersey Shore. I want to go to Chicago. I want to be part of your family at its reunion.
Hey, I want to go to I want to go climb Half Dome like you did. Yes. I want to do what was the park you were just at in San Francisco? You had views that I didn't know were San Francisco. They were amazing. Or the Bay Area, excuse me. It probably wasn't San Francisco. You and your daughter were up on some bluff overlooking. It was a phenomenal photo.
Yes, she lives in San Francisco, and so she finds these little parklets all over the place that nobody knows about.
Yeah, so I want to be there. Come on, right. Everybody wants to be somewhere.
Yes, we're talking about FOMO. I'm talking to three people with grown kids, so let's just leave it there.
Well, you won't miss out on anything, let me tell you, with two. Well, anyway, Rick, you're a familiar name in the industry. You're a familiar guest. You've been with us several times, and as this is the big 20th anniversary of your conference. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Can you give us a couple minute story on how it came to be? I mean, I love this story, but for everybody else, can you help us out?
Well, thank you. 2 minutes, huh? It's like they're a stopwatch. what I would say perhaps is, I mean, if I'm thinking about it in terms of now this milestone, the reasons that the summit came to be are really the same ones that explain how it's still going strong after 20 years. You know, this stuff is hard. You know, few people learn about storytelling in high school or college, and yet many people identify that as the most important skill in good communication. A minority of us, I suspect, actually I know because we polled it, a minority of presentation professionals would consider themselves designers by trade, and yet they're asked to design presentations day in and day out. Everyone sucks at PowerPoint, and we're all scared to death to speak in public, beyond death, in fact. I'm sure that many of you have seen that recent survey placing speaking in public number one among people's worst fears. Dying was number five. So this stuff is hard. And people need all the help they can get, all the support they can find, and a sense of belonging that, you know, makes life a little bit easier. And we provide all three.
Do you want to talk about just sort of the year one and sort of how that?
Well, that's my favorite.
That actually formed.
That's my favorite story because it was a bake off.
I want you to tell it, Troy. Go.
No. But
that was before my time.
It does evolve around food. And let's get together and Dutch ovens and things like that. Yes.
Well, you know, as far as I know, that's a myth. Actually, if it involved,
well, I enjoyed the myth. It was delicious.
I've heard that this all started around a barbecue, but that actually, if so, that predated me, because I know nothing about a barbecue that turned into a conference.
That's really funny. I think I've heard the story that the MVPs were in the news group doing their thing, and someone suggested that everyone get together in real life.
Yeah.
And Kathy mentioned that she would host it at her place or something like that. So I think that's how she was living in Arizona at the time, and that's how it got started.
Well, so again, that predates me.
Steve
reached out to you.
And Steve reached out. Yeah, reached out exactly.
To you. Rick, let us tell us your history. Come on, let us.
Are you trying to sound younger than you are?
So that news group meeting, I think from there, morphed into Steve Rensburg, our friend, my friend. He worked my previous conference, Corel World, for a few
years. That's what
years.
I was hoping you'd talk about, is that conferences are not a new thing for you.
Right. Yeah, no, I was about 10 years in at that point, and Steve Rensburg was running the Help Center, that's what we called it that as well, for Corel World. And so he told that news group community, well, I know the guy who can do it. And so he then pretty much roped me in. The MVP community already existed. Steve was a member of it. So was the aforementioned Echo Swinford. I believe that none of the three of you were yet. But I went up to Seattle for one of those MVP summits that you speak about. And we had a dinner and we talked about it with Steve and Echo and other people. John Wilson, maybe. I mean, you know, some of these folks that were just in the infancy of that group. And we said, okay, well, let's try it. The Arizona connection was pure coincidence. Tucson had been courting me for years, and they offered to fly me there at their expense, which very few cities do. And so I said, okay, fine, I'll go. And we found this converted Holiday Inn that was a Radisson Hotel or something, and we were in their basement where they had their ballrooms, and there you go.
Wow.
So that was year one of the presentation summit, but you had been doing Corel conferences.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. There's this weird sort of for the kids listening, right? Like we're talking Corel Draw and right. these graphics parties. They're technically still around, right?
They're still around.
This sounds like there was this weird overlap or Venn diagram between PowerPoint and Corel.
Yes, I would say so. There is quite a bit of overlap there. Because at the time, Corel was sort of the distant cousin to Adobe. Now, Adobe had stomped all over the Windows market, and Corel was very much a niche player. And PowerPoint was looked upon with the same type of scorn in many ways.
Oh, absolutely.
So yes, there was quite a bit of overlap. We were all kindred spirits then.
Hold on. Because I actually have a Corel connection I want to bring in later. I have it in my notes right in front of me here. But let's bring us to present. Rick, tell us about this year's event, specifically that it's an in-person event with a remote attendee offering. So it's a true hybrid conference. Will this be similar to last year's Clearwater, Florida conference? What's the expectations and excitement?
In a word, yes. Yeah, it'll be similar. You know, we did a lot of things right last year, and I can't really think of a reason to deviate too far from that. I think people were quite gratified that the virtual audience, they felt so engaged, that the two audiences got to interact with one another. So we'll definitely continue that. And the concept of meeting hosts, where colleagues and friends, not some anonymous, hired gearhead, they were acting as the bridge between presenter and virtual audience. I think everyone really appreciated that, the meeting hosts and the way that we brought people together. So I would say that we're just looking to tweak a little bit. I want more interaction. I want more engagement. I want virtual audience members to be heard in ballrooms. I want more of them on camera during group discussions or networking events. You know, we weren't really set up to do that last year. We didn't really even try. But I'm optimistic of our pulling that off this year.
So you're starting to answer one of my questions, which is sort of after 20 years. Well, the question is, I guess, after 20 years, how has the conference remained relevant in your eyes? And I think, as you just answered, I mean, you're technically, you're rolling with all the punches and adapting it to this new hybrid normal that we have. But so I think from a technical standpoint, I mean, that's a great answer. But just sort of from a more larger picture perspective, like, why didn't, 10 years ago, why didn't you say, all right, we've done this, put a close on, but how have you kept sort of rolling that boulder
down?
Yeah, you're
right. It's much more than just technical. I mean, it's nice to know that this old dog can learn new tricks. I mean, that was a COVID silver lining for me. But stepping out from that, I would not want to minimize the learning. Because if we don't have that, we don't make it to 2 years, let alone 20. So that's really first and foremost, that we make people's heads explode. And I'd like to think that it's what separates us from other learning events. But I think it's fair to acknowledge that there are really many quality outlets for learning today. I think it's the community aspect of the conference that really does set us apart. We're small. We're intimate, we're familial, I think that's a word. And people really do attend for the friendships. I remember when I met each of you. Troy, you played in the trivia contest that first year. And Sandy, you were part of that 5 killer slides contest in 2004 that had everyone pulling all-nighters as if they were preparing for a final in college. And Nolan, it was Atlanta 2009. That was the year that we all jumped in the pool fully clothed. I actually can't remember if you joined us in that particular pursuit.
You featured a very flattering photo of me year 2 of the conference in the trivia contest. Very flattering. It's in social media. I'm doing something contortionist. Thank you very much.
Death by PowerPoint, and you're like collapsing or something. Yes, I remember.
I think you really hit upon that community aspect, because unlike other conferences, I mean, I'm sure some people, maybe look at it as clicky, but that's the whole conference. Like, that's everybody. Like, it's not
just everybody's in the clique.
Everybody's in the clique, right? So it's like everybody that's there. And I think, you know, certainly, you know, my year one, I knew nobody. Everybody's year one, you know, they generally don't know that many people. And it's that ends day one. Like, instantly, you know, people instantly, you're welcomed in instantly. Every, you know, you're like, we hear this year after year. It's like, I found my people. Like, I found the people that have all the same challenges and all the same, you know, perspectives that I do.
For me, the real magic is the Sunday evening welcome reception. Cause if ever there's a time that people are going to be shy, it's then. And I'm surprised that the people actually come down from their hotel rooms for it. But not only do they come down.
It is an open bar, but go on.
Yes.
And free food.
That is not happenstance. But everybody's just so ready to meet other people. I we've never had to do icebreakers. We don't do any of those dumb games where you put something on your forehead or, you know, the team just walks around and meets people and brings people together. It is so easy. And there's just something about it. And I think maybe it gets back to the fact that in our real lives, you know, we feel sort of marginalized as presentation professionals. And now here it's, yes, we get to meet our people.
Yeah. I think that I always feel that it's a 3-day conference. Like, I always feel like at the end of that, it's like, I didn't have enough time to actually sit down with everybody. Like, it's just packed. It's like every hour of the day. You know, you're meeting with somebody, you're in a session, you're doing this, and it's all fantastic. And you just kind of
And that's why, and for some people, it's actually a week. They come on Saturday and they don't leave till Friday.
Yeah.
Exactly. It is, I think, the community thing, Rick, you hit it, because as I'm thinking back, you're right. I mean, I go to conferences literally every week, sometimes two in a week, because I'm working at them. But the ones I attend as an attendee, there are none where I have the connection with people and I look forward to it. I mean, I just finished a huge SCO, sales kickoff event. And it was, you know, thousands of people from all over the world getting together. And there was a lot of camaraderie, this and that, but they were all thinking about, you know, the business aspects of things. And they're excited to be around people. Maybe, I don't know. It just doesn't have that same sense of community. Like, hey, okay, I know these people as my friends. It's more of a connections thing where there is a real connection at this. Okay. Anyway, thank you. That's actually, I hadn't thought about that way. Perfect. Community is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. And in a way, it's a bit of a double-edged sword for me, because people say, oh, this conference is so great. I'll bet next year you can get 800 people here. Yeah, no.
I was probably one of those people a while ago. And you quickly put me in my place because... Oh.
I hope I did it gently.
Yes, you did. No, you explain. And it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that it needs to stay small. Otherwise, it becomes, you know, a cattle call. It becomes herding cats. You know, or
for those listening, small is several hundred people, not several thousand. Exactly. It is not intimate, tiny. It is manageable. I think it's great.
Yeah. Under 200,
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But you also have the online community. But let's going forward a little bit. I want to remind us all that. Or going back, I should say, that the original name of this conference was PowerPoint Live.
That's right.
And with PowerPoint as the key tool. Mm-hmm. So just, let's address that from your vantage point, Rick. What have been some major shifts in the overall presentation world that you've seen over the past 20 years in terms of design, software, delivery, recognition, et cetera?
Okay, well, I hope I don't disappoint anybody with this answer. I don't know. I kind of think that until we perfect holograms or telepathy, I kind of reject the notion of big shifts. You know, even now that we've almost completely accepted virtual presenting, I don't really call that a shift. The same principles, the same challenges and opportunities are at play here still. There are always new toys. Troy, I'm really looking forward to your session on Cameo. And Nolan, you always seem to advance the state of the art of chart design at the conference. And Sandy, your work is consistently brilliant. But there's a reason why the bread and butter topics at the conference are usually the most popular ones. The core principles of communication are timeless. and absent holograms or mind reading. I really don't expect that to change anytime soon. So I don't really, I don't know what the big shifts are.
Well, Rick, you are so practical. That is totally not the answer. I was thinking, think of all the things that have shifted. We went from blue background and bullet points 20 years ago as the norm, which is why I came into yellow headlines for sure. Right. And I was like, I'm thinking all these, I'm like, and the software can now do embedded video. And I'm thinking, you're like, pretty much the same challenges exist for a presenter. So you know what? From a design perspective, it's still very similar challenges. How do I convey this so the audience will get it? Maybe more attention to it, but you are so right on and practical. I feel humbled by the fact that I was just going in 9 different directions.
Well, do you want to talk?
Go ahead.
So do you want to talk just a little bit about more about the software and it, you know, and PowerPoint, and, you know, we've tried to go into Keynote and Google Slides, but it seems like it, you know, to be frank, it's still mostly a PowerPoint conference.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's forever going to be Bill Gates' most profound legacy, that he made Microsoft Office the modern day chicken in every pot. And PowerPoint came along for the ride. You know, we could debate the relative strengths of PowerPoint and Keynote and Prezi and Google Slides and many others. And we could also drive to Home Depot and fight over which hammer we think is going to be the best to pound nails into a piece of wood. I do think that Morph is a game changer. I think that Morph has taken the capability of slide designers to new levels. Other than that, I don't know. I think the software is a mediocre commodity. I rank it below design skills, oratory, and storytelling instincts.
Ooh. Well, what about this? So I said I was going to reference Corel.
Yeah.
That design, it's a suite. Unlike, I mean, all under one name was Vector, Raster. It had some animation capabilities integrated. I mean, it's a full-featured design suite all under one name. So here's the question I have to correlate this, because I think you're probably one of the very few people I personally know that could actually answer this.
In other words, I'm old enough?
No, you actually existed and know what Corel is. So do I, by the way. but, you know, PowerPoint came onto the scene, and it's dominant, as you just said, Nolan, because there really aren't any major competitors to it. I have used, I'm going to say, almost every software that's come out in the last 20 years, because some companies adopted it and used it, and then I watch it just fade away. Nothing has ever gained momentum enough to be, what do you call it? You know, where everybody, you know, it hasn't reached mass use, where it holds its own. I mean, PowerPoint does, and it had the Microsoft engine pushing it into everybody, but it's also improved. I'd say it's proved more in the last, 10 years than it had in since its inception. So PowerPoint reached its, what anniversary was this? 30 years. So in the last 10 years, it's improved more as far as capabilities than it had in the previous 20. But here's my analogy. PowerPoint's dominant because there's just no one really challenging it out there, I don't think. I mean, Google Slides is there. It is phenomenal. It's from a huge company, but it doesn't get a huge push. Mm-hmm. Keynote was huge, and Apple kind of reined back and said, we'll just include it with our suite. And you know, there's also that you have to be in the Mac ecosystem, which is a smaller subset of people. Corel, on the other hand, it was an honest alternative competitor resource for the graphic designer. I mean, it did everything. And in some cases, it did it better than what Adobe or Macromedia, remember Freehand, one of my favorites?
Yeah.
So anyways, Corel was dominant, but it still exists. Is there any presentation software that's existed as long as PowerPoint's still in use?
Oh boy.
Is there any design software besides a Corel that's been around as long as Adobe's suite?
I'm sure somebody's still making presentations with Quark, but they shouldn't.
Yeah, Quark is
that's making slides, but what are they presenting? They're probably throwing it into PowerPoint.
We're not getting into that whole conversation, but I do want to point out the way you phrased that, Troy, was you said something like nobody has challenged PowerPoint. And I think that's really the way to say it, because it's not that there aren't competitors. People are like every day. Last week, I think I found 2 more online, you know, software companies that just opened up with making slides. But nobody's challenged it in the way that you have to, because if you want, for example, if you wanted to challenge Quark, which Adobe InDesign did, you got to develop it. You can't just like Google Slides throw it out there and put out an update, you know, once a year or add a tiny little thing, like, and Keynote doesn't get developed either. So that's not challenging. And if you're not actually meeting it, you know, in the marketplace with features and updates. Anyway, that's my.
Well, all the new software basically says, just like PowerPoint, or we are, better yet, they have a save as PowerPoint. Did Corel ever do that?
Too.
Corel never said that. They said, we're a design suite. They never said, we're just like Photoshop. I never heard Corel, I never noticed Corel say, we do vector work just like Freehand or at Illustrator, which wasn't nearly
as
nice.
They were the ones being compared to. I mean, Adobe was the up and comer. Corel was the market leader back in the early 90s. To your point, Nolan, here's what I predict. You know who I predict will challenge PowerPoint? Canva.
Ooh.
I think Canva will be the real. I think Canva is to PowerPoint as Adobe was to Corel. And if they follow the same path, who knows? Maybe Canva will one day feed Microsoft, feed PowerPoint its lunch.
I got $10 on that for you.
Yeah. That's an interesting conversation right there.
Why do you think that, Rick? I mean, I heard the analogy, but tell me why you think it's the biggest challenger.
They're very well positioned. They are full of energy. They've got an extremely loyal base, and they want to take over the world. They have stated it as an objective that they want to be regarded as the standard for presentation content and creation. You know, right now you can make the case that they already are for content.
That's exactly where I was going to go. Is Canva has a phenomenal base of ways to create the visuals. They just have a really crappy way of delivering it. They basically create JPEGs that you throw into Google Slides or PowerPoint. Yeah. They don't have a presentation software. So on the software side, they're not there, but on the content side,
I
could see them being dominant from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
All right.
Okay, back to the presentation summit.
Yes.
This is the 20th anniversary. Congratulations. Any big plans or sneak peeks we can get?
You know, I hope so, but I have to be honest with you. We're still dealing with COVID. You know, we're still trying to assure people that it's safe to travel. Now, the person to ask really is our head of ops, the beloved Sheila McGurran, who, by the way, has been with me for all 20 of our seasons. And she's down in San Diego as we speak, and she found a lovely venue for our Tuesday evening reception. And I would suspect that she has a few things up her sleeve for observing this milestone. She's really the one you need to ask. Maybe she'll roast me. That would be pretty cool, don't you think?
So Rick's keeping everything a surprise as usual.
I don't know.
Okay, so speaking of FOMO, which we all addressed at the beginning of this this recording, I'm sad to say that I won't be able to attend this year.
I didn't know that.
Wait,
being on this is canceled. Just breaking my heart. And it's my third miss. You know, I wasn't on year one, and then I had a little health scare a few years back. And this year, my son, I'm going to his nearly week long engagement celebration. So
that should be in San Diego.
I know. Come on, Mom.
No, that's in Denver instead. It's in Denver instead. Oh. But anyway, no surprises. I can't believe you're not giving us any sneak peeks, but everyone, they must be really, really good because they're top secret. So moving on then, Rick, what have you been the most proud of over the years? And what's one of the things that you really, is there anything that you wish you'd done differently?
Oh, I'm sure there are things I've done differently, but I'm old enough to really know better than to look back with regret on things. it has to all come from that whole question of community we talked about. I mean, when I look at the relationships that have been formed at this conference, look at the three of you. You know, you met at the conference, and yeah, you might have met otherwise, but you know, our community needed something like that to assure that we would all find one another, and we have. And so that is certainly the thing that makes me the most proud, is when I look at the the relationships that have been formed, the way that the conference has made people's lives just a little bit better.
That's awesome.
That's amazing. Again, perspective is everything. I that's amazing.
Now, regrets. Okay, so you know, could I have turned this into some sort of an empire? Maybe so, and I'll always wonder about that. Is it a regret? I don't know, but I wonder about that. Now, probably though, it would have impacted the conference. The conference then probably would have gone in a different direction, and so you know, we didn't want that. So being a small-time operator certainly has its perks, even if I wonder if I could have done more.
Well, isn't it a full-time job getting this conference off the ground every year? I mean, what else could you do? You don't have any time.
thank you for saying that. I love that I have created that illusion. the team has been in place for so long. That's why the three of you keep coming back year after year, engagement parties notwithstanding. And, you know, so that perhaps is the silver lining for this not having been turned into some large company, that you all have your own lives. You do your own things. And 1 week out of the year, you come together to create the most loyal team that any conference organizer would ever dream of.
Oh. Well, let's talk about one of the issues I know you always deal with is encouraging people to come. So it was generally new attendees. So what's your most successful argument for encouraging people to attend? And of course, that you always try to give people the argument to give to their bosses, right?
Yeah.
So what's the public facing best argument you've seen?
Well, it has to go back to learning, networking, and support. You know, I can't lead with the fact that you're going to meet your people and you're going to create lifelong friends and you're going to party with them and you're going to change your life forever. That all may be true, but I can't lead with that. You have to lead with the fact that you're just going to learn more at this conference. You're going to be exposed to more ideas at this conference than you ever thought possible, because the expertise that is brought together in one place is like nothing that can be found on the planet anywhere else. And I know that sounds like hyperbole, but again, if you go to the website and you look at the team, you know, the talent that's on the team, it's really easy to make that claim. So that's what you start with, that the people who are in need of support for their presentation and communication demands and issues, they're going to find it at this conference like they never thought, they never could have imagined.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've never, as running my own business, I'm glad I've never had to make the argument, because it's always been a no-brainer for me to attend. Always.
I appreciate that.
I'm constantly impressed with the number of people that show up to say they got their company to pay their way to the conference. One, I'm enviable of that. Mm-hmm. Two, it's just, I have a question, Rick. This might, you might not have the data for this. Have you seen an uptick over the years of people having that said? I'm going to say at the beginning, very few companies would even recognize presentation design as a category that needs education. But over time, have you had more and more attendees with basically where they mention, or I don't know how you collect that data, say that they are here because it's part of their, you know, company's education pot of money?
Yeah, I'm really not. I really don't think that statistic has changed much. Oh. I think that we're about 65-35 larger companies to smaller ones or self-employed people. While yes, back when we started, companies didn't have a clue that they needed to invest in this, and we were comprised of the most forward-thinking of them. Now there are more companies that think that. I think we've always been about 65-35.
Interesting.
I think it's going to change. I think, you know, we're coming out of COVID. Just looking at LinkedIn and the presentation designer, specialist, expert positions that are available within corporations and agencies, I think you're going to see an uptick in those numbers.
So you think maybe it's even more than, you think it'll be 75-85?
that people pay to answer Troy's question, that companies start paying? Yes, I think they're willing to, they'll be willing to invest in that skill. That's my prediction for 2023.
All right. Ooh,
next episode.
It's like mid-year predictions coming out now. Yep. Hey, well, I guess past mid-year. Hey, Rick, so last question here. Does the presentation summit, you know, I asked this in a two-part way. Does the presentation summit have another 20 years in it? More, not so much about you, because I know you want to look at this, you may not look at the horizon and say 20 years more of this, I don't know. But does presentation design conference as a summit have 20 years of life in it? Is there an industry there? Is there life? Is there community?
Yes. Yes, I believe so. I think that, well, first of all, you're right. Do I have 20 years left in me? No. my marriage couldn't survive that. So, but I think that we always need to be learning. And I think if the four of us came back together 20 years from now and you asked me, do you remember the way you answered that question about what's new? And I said, well, not very much, because people still need to communicate. They still need to open their mouths and speak, and they need to be able to do that with poise and confidence. And those are going to be challenges that will be with us as long as we are a species. So in that context, yes, 20 years from now, we are still going to need these skills. What they might look like could be profoundly different. I think in 20 years from now, we will have some sort of holographic technology that will allow us to stand up and speak before a room full of people when we are not in that room. And that will be profound for us. But you still need to open your mouth and speak.
Rick, you're really hung up on this hologram. I think you really want that, no?
I'm a Star Trek aficionado. So, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, presentation people, that's a wrap on prepping for the presentation summit. You know, that's a conversation about what we're going to be doing in a month. I am certain we'll see many of you that are listening in San Diego for this. I look forward to it. It's going to be great. Hey, thank you, Rick, for spending some time with us. You know, just about a month out from the conference. I know you must have like, I don't know, 1,000 things on your task list at this point that are there every single day. The Presentation Summit 2022 edition will be linked to in the show notes. If anybody is not familiar, click it, read it, join us. It'll be fun. I it's fantastic. Hey, Rick, are you okay joining us for staying for a few more minutes doing a pro and tech tip?
Oh boy, do I have a good pro and tech tip. Yes.
Oh, great. Well, let's jump over to those.
You want to start, Troy?
Yeah. I've got a good one. Okay, so here's my pro and tech tip. This is both on the pro and the techie side. So everybody uses a laptop, I'm going to say. We actually just recently bought another desktop, but it's a novelty. It's a monster. It's actually very small. It's the Legion Gaming Cube, but it is a monster in power. But we did buy a desktop, but we also bought, I think, probably 10 laptops during the same time period. You know, laptops are great. Laptops are portable. Laptops walk away from you when you don't want them to. I highly endorse putting a lock. And it's not so much that the locks are that robust. I mean, they go into a little teeny slot. There's a little teeny piece of metal on each side. They're just a deterrent to keep the honest people honest. I am just continuously baffled by the fact that MacBook Pros do not have any locking mechanism. So, tech tip, pro tip. Company out there has a little bolt-on lock port on the side. It's very diminutive. It works on the new M1, M2 class laptops. I'll put a link to it. It's literally two specialty screw heads. So, you know, if you have the screwdriver, you could get it off. And all it does is put a lock port there. It just means that my laptops, you know, when we have 2, 3, 10 MacBooks laid out on a table and backstage in an unmonitored room, mine aren't going to disappear, but the one sitting next to it that is not locked down because they didn't do it, that's the one that'll disappear.
But Troy, is these are for Mac. So where does it go? like
creates a little nubbin, if you will, a little wart off of the side, kind of down by the trackpad level, but on the left or right, you get to choose which side, depending on, I guess, which mouse hand you like to use. And they just bolt in. There's, if you look at the underside of the Mac, there are little, there are little screw heads. You're going to take off the, you're going to take off the Mac screws and you're going to replace it with these specialty screws.
So you're using existing holes to.
Yes, exactly. You're not modifying, you're not gluing. They literally just screw in.
Drilling into your MacBook. Okay, good.
So I'm going to put a link to it because if you have a Mac, it's 40. The one I got was $40, maybe 45, and it came with the actual cable lock as well, which is
okay.
I'm going to throw a second tip in there as a bonus because I have my new laptop is a Lenovo X1 Extreme. So it's basically like their MacBook Pro, if you will. I'm just on the Windows side. I like Windows better. I definitely like PowerPoint on the Windows side better. But I went to lock it up. I literally went to an event and I went to lock it with the same lock I use all the time and it wouldn't fit. There is now a new configuration, which I think Apple should adopt. It's called the Nano Lock. Arg, 75 plus locks in our inventory, and none of them work on this computer because it's a different type. It's a very small, diminutive type of lock. It opens sideways instead of twisting up and down. So, hey, there's a new type of lock out there called the Nano Lock, which you need if you get a new computer. Check it before you show up and go, can't lock it down. Sandy, you got a pro or tech tip for us? Rick, we're saving you for the end here. You get to wrap it up with that big announce.
Okay. I'm going to speak to this, but I'm also going to give you a visual demo because we are on video. So traveling with charging wires, charging cords for our iPhones, for our watches, for now our earbuds, right? I mean, it's just nightmare. For all the travelers in this room, I just purchased a 3-in-1 portable / travel magnetic wireless charger. So it's folded up like it's the size of a wallet. This is your travel.
She's showing it to the camera, podcast listeners.
It looks like
everybody everybody watch. And then there's also a little, you know, charging port. One charging port for your phone.
Okay. For open it up.
Your
Is like a magic trick. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yep. See? It's for all three of them. And it's one cord you need to travel with. Of course, it comes with it. It's the one I purchased was off of Instagram, which I don't recommend. But I'm putting a link in the show notes to the Amazon page that has many, many options between $30 and $40. Apple only has a Duo for $119. It's still, so if you don't need three ports, or not ports, but charging pads. In their multiple charging pad, which is $149, it's great. It has room for everything, but it doesn't travel. This is for travelers.
That's very cool. All right. Yeah, it's like a little GoBot. It just folds out, and has three MagSafes. So those of you, we do not have a video version of this podcast for those of you listening. We all see each other just so we could catch reactions, and that was pretty awesome.
Talk about FOMO.
Yeah. I'm actually looking for the link for that right now.
Speaking of traveling, I don't use the magnetic chargers, but I still use something that Troy recommended on the podcast, which is a squid cable. So it has four connectors. It's got USB-C, it's got two lightnings, it's got a mini USB-C, and that always takes care of all my devices when I'm traveling.
Nolan, I have to give you the new one. I found one that has if you have an Apple Watch, it has the Apple Watch round disc charger on it. So that's my new version of that.
I'm still not doing the watch, but yeah, we've got a bunch of them and
what are you going with?
I'm going with a home tip. And I feel like I've given this one before, but if I did, I'm going to give it again because I just can't tell you how as helpful this thing is. Govee water detectors. Now, there are a lot of different water detectors. I think SimpliSafe has one. I mean, whatever ones you want to use, but these I really like. They're cheap. They're like, you get a two pack for like $22, and there's like a little hub, which you need as well. But we have like, I keep buying more of these. We've got like four or five or six of them.
What does it do? Is this like a divining rod? It tells you where water is at your property?
Well, it's a water sensor. So we put one under our ACs. We put one under our kitchen sink by our-
It detects water leaks.
Yes, exactly. It's a water tech.
I'm with you.
So when it works either, each little unit works either if the floor gets wet or if like something splashes on top of it. And these things, like now that we're doing construction and everything, they've gone off for us over the past few years, like 4 or 5 times. Like our kitchen sink had a leak, and immediately, you know, so you save, you know, all this damage. And, you know, we had a little mini flood in the basement. It wasn't too bad, but you get notified immediately by email, by text, and the thing is super loud. So you hear it and sometimes it's a mistake, it gets water on it. Sometimes it's not an issue. But the times that there have been an issue, like it's saved us, you know, just, I can't imagine what it saved us, you know,
Californians. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I love these. I keep buying more of them because, you know,
I'm going to, just had a plumber, you know, you trust plumbers, right? Brand new faucet. And about a month later, all of a sudden my travel stuff was wet and pulled it out, and there was mold in there.
Ew, it's different out here, though. We Californians regard water detection differently. You found water? Where? Give me the coordinates. Come on.
Okay, Rick, hit us with a pro or tech tip. This is a good one. It was a big lead up. We got drum roll happening here.
I just bought a new computer. It is maybe the most sophisticated one I have ever owned. Even though it does not have a hard drive or a mouse, it only has a 12-inch screen.
What?
And it lives in my garage. My new car is essentially a computer. It has its own operating system, user settings, voice prompts, crazy good artificial intelligence. And last night I updated the software with a flash drive and everything. It is really amazing how evolved new cars are today. And this one is all electric. So it is whisper quiet and it drives like a freaking rocket.
What did you get? I got no toys
for the next 3 years. I'm good.
What did you get?
The Hyundai Ioniq 5.
Oh, that is like the star of the electric world right now. Yes. It's got more gadgets and gizmos than anybody.
Get it. And I flew down to San Diego in order to buy it. There weren't any up here.
Really?
But maybe the only road trip I'm going to take in this was to get it home. And it is just an amazing vehicle. And it's just remarkable how much tech is in modern cars today.
Cool. Fantastic. Well, no, you got to bring it to San Diego. I'll bring mine and we can go out. I know San Diego. I know some back streets. We can go out at night and we can see who's faster.
We're gonna have a little grease drag race with Lori dropping the bandana.
There's no sound.
It's just crazy. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. That was a great lead up, by the way. I was completely baffled. That's awesome.
It's so good.
Rick, thanks for joining us, really.
It was my pleasure to spend time with 3 good friends.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, professional presentation design agency. Check us out online. We have virtual meetings at vxpmeeting.com. We have a blog, which I just keeps going. There's never an end to options. Rick, just like you, there's never an end to what you can talk about in presentation world. So, hey, thanks for joining us here at the Presentation Podcast.
And this is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. You can check out my site, nolanhamescreative.com, where you can get some free downloads and goodies and find out about our training and design services. And also, don't forget about thebetterdeckdeck.com. We've got a PDF version, a physical version, and also the PowerPoint source files if you're lazy like me. And you can just use those to start creating bullet point-less slides in an instant.
Oh, wait, I got to interject. Nolan, Lori's doing a training for corporations, people that makes their pitch decks. The Better Deck Deck is the only prop she is using.
And nice.
And she is putting out a here's where to buy it. You guys should use this because your slides need help.
I would have given her a discount code.
Oh, she might follow up. But anyways, it's literally the only thing she brought to that training was, I mean, her computer, her, and that is the one prop for pitch deck people.
Nice.
Sorry. Go on, Sandy.
Oh, sure. This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz, or you can reach out to me to request a free download of my presentation storyboarding PDFs. You'll also find me on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as @PPTWhiz. Finally, be sure to check out the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org.
And this is Rick Altman with the Presentation Summit. We are celebrating 20 years as the standard bearers for all things presentation, October 9 to 12 in beautiful San Diego or anywhere that there is an internet connection, presentationsummit.com.
Thank you for joining us for another presentation and PowerPoint conversation. Episode show notes are available at the Presentation Podcast website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com, where you can also send us episode suggestions, questions, or comments. Don't leave people out of the conversation. Recommend the Presentation Podcast everyone. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc., and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.